On today's episode of On the Clock with Kristen Peek, we're going to be talking to Rob Cassidy, Rivals.com national basketball analyst. This year's one and done class of high school players, some under the radar second rounders, all you Zach Edey fans out there, and a very early look at next year's class. Let's get into it. Welcome to On the Clock with Kristen Peek. I'm Kristen Peek, NBA draft analyst for Yahoo Sports. We'll be coming to you each week between the NBA draft lottery and the NBA draft itself with everything you need to know about this year's upcoming draft class. Today, we're joined by Rob Cassidy, national basketball analyst for our sister site, Rivals.com. Rob, thanks so much for joining me. I can't believe that we're both not on the road at some event right now.
It's been a long 4 weeks, and I am going to soak up my time in my new house in Pittsburgh and try to get things unpacked. But it's good. Yeah, it's nice seeing you again, though.
Yes. Yeah. Well, today we're going to talk about how to evaluate high school prospects as NBA potential players and all things NBA draft, including who might be the biggest surprises, who's flying under the radar, and an early look at next year's draft class. And I've said this in our first pod, you know, the general consensus is this is a weaker draft class. I don't like to call it weak. It's just going to be unpredictable. There are going to be some guys, we just don't know who they are. But when I look back at this high school class, this one and done class, Rob, I was shocked to see the top 10 in terms of who was top 10 in high school and where they're at projected in this draft or not even in this draft. They're going back to school. But how hard is it to project high school talent in the NBA?
It differs from year to year and player to player, position to position. And, you know, I know you don't want to say it's a weak class, but I will. At least it was a weak high school class. I mean, I think that's why when you look at it and you see the Europeans at the top, obviously, you know, they're all very deserving. I'm not as plugged into the European scene as you are, but at least from a high school standpoint, it's been the consensus in our industry that it was a weak class since they were juniors in high school. And I haven't seen anything that's really changed my mind there. This class was particularly difficult to project because of there was no clear number one. You know, we didn't have a Cooper Flag or a AJ DeBanza. We had, you know, kind of debates on who would be there. We went with Isaiah Collier because he was safe. You know, we used to call him the Volvo because, like, you know, he's safe pick. You know, he's not going to wow anybody, but he's not going to make you look stupid either. And I'm in the business of not looking extremely stupid. And I feel like he's done that at least. So it's been interesting to watch his ride.
Well, let's run through the top five, Rob, of the high school class. Like you said, Isaiah Collier was number one when everything was said and done. And by the way, he was awesome at McDonald's and Hoop Summit. Like he looked like a number one caliber player. So he was number one. Aaron Bradshaw, the Kentucky center who kind of disappeared. Number two, Justin Edwards, another Kentucky player. He's like, I'm calling him the comeback kid of the pre-draft process because he did so well at the combine. He could sneak into the late first round. Modest Bouzelis, number four, lottery pick. Ron Holland, lottery pick. Both played for G League Ignite. Were you surprised at all at the output of this class as freshmen or in the G League?
You know, I don't know. I always thought it was going to be pretty dicey. From top to bottom. I didn't think Reed Shepard obviously was going to. We did have him ranked higher than everybody else, but I didn't think he was going to be one of the top players in this draft. And there were guys that surprised me, obviously. But I was worried about it from the beginning. You know, even when you talk about guys like Holland are going to go high, I still have a ton of concerns about him. And they're the same ones that I had in high school. Can he score in the half court? He's not a great shooter. Like, he looks the part, and there's a lot of potential there, but I have not seen him put together anything that screams top five pick to me. And he's, you know, considered one of the top American prospects in this draft. So, you know, I think the conversations and events were always kind of like, ooh, this is kind of a scary class. And, you know, some of that's came to fruition because, you know, some of the top guys just didn't pan out as quickly as we'd hoped. And then anybody hoped, but I wouldn't say that I'm stunned by it.
You mentioned Ron Holland. Modest Bouzelis is kind of like this trendy name that's trending up for NBA teams. Do you have him higher as an NBA prospect over Ron, like you said, because of your concerns about his shooting ability?
Well, I mean, there are concerns about everyone, right? His concerns are, you know, what does he really give you in the post? You know, he can shoot it a little bit. I mean, he's not a great shooter, Bouzelis. But, you know, he has the length and he has the fluidity and he has the versatility that the NBA values. So you can see why he would go high. But again, it's such a stake to potential over production that there's a risk there, which is really the same conversations we had about him in high school.
Yeah. Well, I was surprised when I saw him in the fall that he had actually put on like 25 pounds of muscle and has seemed...
I haven't seen him in a while. He looks good.
He looks good. Yeah. You know, what's funny is I saw him at the combine and his hair was all disheveled and he was walking through the lobby and I was like, oh, hey, did you just like go work out? Did you just get up from a nap? And he's like, no, I just had meetings with teams and, you know, I had to go get my medical. I'm like, I love that.
No, this is just how I look, Kristen.
Yes, he is unapologetically himself. And I love Modest for that. Who do you think will be the biggest surprises in this draft class? I mean, you mentioned Reed Sheppard and how productive he was coming off the bench at Kentucky. And by the way, did you know he could jump like that and had a 42-inch max vert?
No, I knew he was a little more athletic than people thought in high school just because stereotypes, and I watched him play a lot. But I don't think anybody would have told you he was going to have a 42-inch vert. As far as guys that like I think could be surprises, I'm on record in a group of other reporters saying if I had any kind of backbone whatsoever, I would have made Castle number one in this class. And I still think he's got the chance just because of the versatility, just because of all the different things he can do. And I don't think he's maxed out from a skill standpoint yet. I think that down the road, there's a good chance that we'll look back on Stephen Castle being the guy in this draft. I'd take him number one out of the high school players anyway. I don't know a ton about the Europeans, but I would not give somebody a side eye if they took him as the top high school player.
The thing I love so much about Stephon Castle, this is the UConn guard, the freshman guard, who skyrocketed up draft boards after the Final Four appearance against Alabama when Nate Oates said, all right, freshman who historically has had a bad season shooting from the outside, we're going to make you beat us. And Stephon was like, all right, I will. And he had 21 points. He followed that up in the championship game with 15 points. His defensive versatility and his size is what's going to get him on the court sooner. And I'm with you, Rob. Like, I love his upside as an NBA player. And you're not alone in this.
Here's the other. I think the shooting woes and the numbers don't look good. I think that having watched him a lot between AAU and high school, it could be a sample size thing. You know, I know a college season isn't exactly a tiny sample size, but it's not a huge one either. And I've seen enough of him to know that he's a better shooter than those numbers dictate. And we might see that going forward. I think there's definitely maybe a sample size concern over kind of the knock on his shooting. Now, he's not Steph Curry, but I think he's better than he shot at this year at UConn.
Yeah, and we have to remember, he came off an injury. He was trying to find his rhythm. Probably a lot of that played into it. And he wasn't asked to be the guy on that team. That team was loaded with talent. So, all right, Steph Castle, we're both in the same stratosphere with him. I actually have him number three on my big board behind Alex Saar and Zachary Richache. So, you know, maybe we're right, Rob. Maybe everyone should just start listening to us. A question for you. Were you at the AAU game when it was at the end of the summer in Las Vegas? I can't remember if you were there, but you probably definitely saw it and watched it on TV, if not. But it was Bronny James's Strive for Greatness. And he brought on Rob Dillingham, a couple other, you know, big five-star players. And they played against Reed Sheppard and his AAU team. And Reed just like killed. He killed.
No, that's when we skyrocketed him. Like, we haven't had him higher than everybody else. Now, not high enough. But there were some indicators that maybe he was going to be a contributor. I think if you go back on his profile, you can find me writing that I think he was the most ready to contribute day one of maybe the Kentucky guys. Now, did I think he was one and done? No. But yeah, I remember that game. And that was kind of like, oh man, he's on a court full of stars and he is the star.
Yes.
And that was an indicator.
Yeah. And Rob Dillingham, I mean, just coming from, gosh, his journey has been crazy.
Boy, has it.
It's been crazy.
The fact that he was able to survive Donda Academy with his, like, he was like the only one that went to the crazy
and AJ Johnson. AJ Johnson did too.
Yeah, but the jury's still out on AJ Johnson. Kind of, Rob just survived somehow. You know, his trajectory remained positive and he didn't, like, a lot of guys on that team tanked. Like, they just never were the same. You know, shocking when you put your life in the hands of Kanye West that something bad would happen. But so, you know, I don't think you can say anything better for Rob than he survived Donda.
Yeah, but then he went to OTE and then the projections coming in from OTE to Kentucky, there were worries. Was Cal going to let him play freely? He did. Could he create separation off the dribble? He showed that. Now we're at the combine and he measures at 6'1" and a half with no shoes and 164 pounds. So there's more pause. But you watch him on the court and he is a dog. Like, he can get wherever he wants on the court. He's extended his shooting to past 3-point range. He can hit those daggers, but really great at finishing through contact. But then you have teams that are saying, well, look at Scoot Henderson and how he struggled in his rookie year. How long is it going to take Rob to adjust to the physicality? Where do you see him projecting in the NBA? And do you think he's going to have any trouble whatsoever his rookie season?
I think he's going to have some trouble on the defensive end of the floor. Will that matter in the end? Who knows? But there'll be an adjustment period just because, can you leave on the court? Who's he going to guard? This is like the same conversation with your friend Zach Edey at Purdue. It's, yeah, he does a lot of really translatable, interesting things, but who is he going to guard? And I think that's a question worth asking with Rob. You know, obviously he's one of the best ball handlers in this class. I think he sees the floor incredible well. Sometimes he gets a little sloppy with the ball, turning the ball over, but you know, there's obviously potential. He's going to be a high pick for a reason. I think it's not rocket science to say the concern is the defensive end of the floor. And it'll be interesting to see. I was a little surprised at those measurements. I knew he was smaller, the weight especially.
Right.
Did you kind of see that coming, or did that take you off?
No, I had no idea. And so that was one of the things where I was just like, I wonder how teams are going to read into this. Do you know what I mean? Cause 164 pounds is like, how can you exactly defend like in the NBA at that weight? So he's going to have to get his weight up. I think he probably knows that. He had a hurt ankle and didn't go through agility or shooting testing. So we don't know how that looks. Another player I want to ask you about, Rob, is in your backyard in Pittsburgh. I don't even know where Bub Carrington came from. I don't remember him as a high school prospect. I talked to him and I said, where did you get the nickname Bub? And he said, because his first name is Carlton.
Carlton.
Yes. And he's like, oh, it was my dad's nickname. We have the same name. So I said, so you and your father share not only the same name, but the same nickname? And he goes, yeah. Like, it was, and I was like, okay. But he is someone that, you know, I talk to teams, and when you're looking at the mid first round and what he's doing in workouts leading up to the pre-draft, and when you go back and look at his film, he's climbing the boards. But I don't remember him, Rob. Like, where did he come from?
I remember him. He was a late on the radar guy. I remember him at Peach Jam his junior year. I did not know. I was news to me when people started calling him Bub. I thought they were talking about a different dude, because he had never thought to inform the media that he went by that until he got to Pitt. So I just always knew it was Carlton Carrington. And at that time, he was like a lethal shooter who, you know, the questions about him were, could he handle it well enough? But, you know, he was shooting from the outside. And, you know, he was showing some physicality and rebounding well positionally. We put him in the top 100, obviously not high enough, but the sample size on him was small. Like you said, nobody knew who he was until the end of his junior year, pretty much. And he didn't really break out until his senior year. So, you know, all in all, I probably saw the kid play 5 times, which for me is tiny right. sample size for a top 100 player. But, you know, it's the consistency has been there. And he was playing on a team that wasn't great, didn't have a lot around him, which I think is a positive indicator for him. I don't know that I would stake my life on him being a great NBA player, but I think he's got a chance.
Okay. Glowing review there, Rob. The last player I want to ask you about is Jared McCain. I saw him all throughout high school. This is a dude, he won at every level. I think he won Peach Jam. Didn't he win at Peach Jam?
Yeah.
And he won a high school state championship. Him and Kylan Boswell were incredible. I remember this game against Sierra Canyon when it was Bronny, Amari Bailey. It was during a state playoffs. And this was the game when LeBron was there with Drake, and Drake was yelling at the ref. And Jared and Kylan both like had 4 threes each, and they beat Sierra Canyon at home. Anyways, he's a winner. But coming to Duke, being a smaller guard, I didn't know what to expect for him. I think the turning point for Jared was at Madison Square Garden when they played Baylor. He said he started to really get more comfortable within John Shire's system, but now he's shooting lights out. He looks great. Did you project him to be this sort of NBA prospect?
Yeah, we liked him. And, you know, I think we had 5 stars on him. I can't remember exactly where he was in our rankings. he is so poised, Kristen. And yes, for good reason. You know, he's like a dude that has been like internet famous since he was like 13, and had eyes on him all the time. He was one of these guys that was a little bit Mikey Williams like, where like when he came to play, the gym filled up with, you know, high school kids and girls and guys that like screaming his name. And, you know, he was like a boy band almost for a while just because of the internet following he had. So he's no stranger to pressure, that's for sure. And I don't think the lights will ever be too bright for him. And I think he saw that a little bit at Duke. He got pretty comfortable there. And, you know, he's got the skill set. He gets downhill in a hurry. I like his chances in the NBA. I really do. He's got decent enough size to defend and to stay on the floor. I think long term, you know, I don't know if he's a guy that steps right in and wins the Rookie of the Year or something crazy like that, but I think he can help NBA teams.
Who do you think wins Rookie of the Year?
Oh, I think it could be Castle, man.
I do too. I think it could be him too.
There could be one of these Europeans that you travel and, you know, you're fancy European travel and you get to see these guys. I don't know a ton about the Euros, so maybe one of them. So when I talk about the draft, I talk about the American kids just because my knowledge base of the European guys is so small.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back with more insights on the current and future NBA draft classes. Welcome back to On the Clock with Kristen Peek. I'm Kristen Peek, joined by Rivals.com national basketball analyst Rob Cassidy. Rob, who are some players flying under the radar projected maybe in the second round that you think will have long NBA careers? Can you name anyone that you think?
I'm really starting to like your boy Zach Edey as an NBA player. After the testing at the combine, I know that you're not a huge believer in his NBA future.
I'm coming around. Yes, go on.
I mean, he tested as well as Donovan did at UConn, you know? And I still have my doubts because I watched him play a lot and it doesn't look as fluid as it should. And he's not, you know, if this was 20 years ago, he would be a star though, right? If this was like 1995 NBA, can you imagine this guy? I think he's got a chance. You know, he's a willing shooter. It looks ridiculous, but it's getting better outside of the paint, you know, slowly. You know, I don't think he's going to be a person you build a team around, but I think he can stick in the NBA for a while.
The thing that I like about Zach is when he did his media availability, he was very confident in saying, you know, every team needs a player to anchor their defense. I was asked to play a certain role at Purdue with my back to the basket. I know I have the skill set to like extend my game and I am going to work to be productive in the NBA. So it's like he knows the criticism. And by the way, we talked about this on episode one and with Kyle Boone from CBS and his court sprint or whatever that is, the poor man's 40. And everyone said that he's the guy from Happy Gilmore, like chasing down Shooter McGaddis.
Construction worker.
Yes. I didn't know that that was the NBA comp I needed in this draft. And I'm so much happier for it. But
how did he look shooting it? I wasn't there. I saw some like clips of him shooting it, but I mean, how did it look?
So he kind of like does this thing where he hatches, like he's got a hit shot, right? So he brings it back and then kind of like, it looks like he just like throws it, but it's going in from long range, you know? And I don't know, but you look at Nikola Jokic's shot too, how he kind of has it high up here because nobody can get it and just kind of whoop. You know, that's kind of what Zach Edey's shot looked like, but it was going in. And that's the thing.
When are we going to like decide that high level production means something for the NBA? Sometimes I think we go a little bit too far in projections where sometimes, you know, don't overthink it with him. You know, I think he's got a chance. You know, you can't really, all the knocks on him are like hypotheticals, right? Like what can he do down the road? Nobody wants to talk about what he has done, you know, which I think is important. And I think sometimes in our industry, we get a little carried away with that. It's obviously important, but I think it's kind of gone the other way where, you know, sometimes you got to refocus and actually just watch the tape of what he did at Purdue.
Yeah. A couple other players I want to touch on, you know, we touched on AJ Johnson a little bit. He was awesome at the combine, Rob, like awesome. Yes. He was by far the biggest riser, and Trenton Flowers, who also elected, he was originally committed to Louisville, decided late to decommit and go over and play for the Adelaide 36ers. I went over to Australia. I saw both AJ Johnson, who was formerly committed to Texas, decided to go play for the Illawarra Hawks, Trenton in Adelaide. But these guys were both high profile high school prospects that kind of disappeared. But do you think that, let's start with Trenton Flowers first, 6'8", wing, loves to play above the rim. Do you think he has, you know, the potential to be productive in the NBA?
He is another one where everything is based on potential on him. The production has never really been super consistent. He's had some, he's made some interesting decisions from a, just from a life standpoint.
Correct.
He's been at a million high schools. He's been, I don't necessarily knock anybody for that. But you know, when you combine it with, you know, he went to Louisville and went to one practice and then just peaced out of there. Like, it's not like it was like a late decommitment. He went to campus and he ran through a Kenny Payne practice and then was like, no, I'm out, which maybe was like a decision in retrospect, but I've never seen it from him other than, you know, maybe, you know, 10 minute stretches where it's like, oh, there it is. But it, he hasn't ever, and I haven't watched a lot of, you know, Australian basketball, so maybe he's doing great over there. But when he was in high school, it was always like, okay, he was one of these guys where if he missed his first two shots, forget it, because here comes one for 17, you know? And he was really hard. He really had a hard time like rebounding from adversity, but I understand why people are high on him. You know, it's all the physical traits. It's the fluidity and it's the length. And it's, you know, when you see the 20 minute stretch of him completely taking over a game, your jaw could drop. I don't know how that works against the competition in the NBA. And he's going to really have to level out if he really wants to be a pro.
Here's what I'll say about when we talk about players with high upside and potential and potential, and that's all you ever hear about a player. It's like, how long do you give a player to hit and figure it out before they just disappear in the G League? You know what I mean? So it's like, how long have we been talking about Trent Flowers' potential? And how long are we going to, like, how much grace do you give him before you're like, I don't know.
Well, you know these NBA GMs better than I do. What's an ideal place for him? Like, where can he go and have like a long leash and be allowed to kind of develop?
It would have to be an established team that where they would be patient with him in the G League in that environment. And also, you know, I think I look at Memphis and what they did with Gigi Jackson and kind of giving him the freedom to explore, you know, just his athleticism and be free within an NBA system. That's another thing. Like, I don't know how Trenton is going to do within the spacing, but the potential is still there. So I'm not writing him off yet. But another player that is kind of like, we know who he is. He's an older guy. He's still deciding whether he's going to go back to school. I don't know if you know a lot about Alex Caravan, but he was the best shooter in the 3-point star drill. He made 14 in a row. Bronny James came in second. He made 12. And, you know, talking to him during his media availability, he's like, I don't know what I'm going to do, because for him, it's like, I can go back to a championship caliber coach, staff and team and get better and try to work my way into the first round. Or I think he's like a safe pick, you know, in the beginning to mid second. But what do you know about Alex Caravan and what did you like about what he did at UConn?
We've always liked him too. We've had him ranked relatively highly in high school. He played on a high profile high school team. And I can't remember where it was. It was one of those basketball factory schools. That's all I know. I think he'd be well suited to go back because I think it would solidify him as a first round pick. He was great this year, especially when he needed to be. You know, I don't know where UConn is without him. And, you know, given another year to develop, I think he could be one of the best players in college basketball if he comes back. Now, obviously, I'm a little biased because I'm a college basketball guy. And I'd like to see another year. But I think the jump between year one and year two for him could be massive because he started slow. You know, he didn't really look comfortable out there until conference play in the Big East, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll find out this upcoming week because that's the early entry deadline. Okay.
Hey, let me ask you this while I have you, not to derail this.
No.
Do you know much about Daron Holmes or Dayton? Is he coming back or is he staying in the draft?
I think he's still someone that's waiting to get feedback from the team. I don't think he shot the ball particularly well. He tested well, like in terms of his agility and his times, and he looks the part. And his numbers were great at Dayton, but I don't know. It's still out on him. The verdict is still out on him on whether or not
he's got a little brother that's got a chance to be special in 2026.
Oh,
so if he comes back, maybe Dayton. Yeah, his name's Cameron Holmes. Maybe if he comes back, I wonder if the little brother doesn't go to Dayton. He's going to be better than Daron, except he's, you know, he's like a guard.
Yeah. Well, I don't have the inside scoop on Daron Holmes. So sorry,
I wondered. I just thought I'd ask. You know, I don't get you a lot.
All right. Looking ahead to next year's draft class, everyone knows it's the Cooper Flag year. Do you think we'll start to see teams tank for Cooper? Cooper Flag, who is headed to Duke, Ace Bailey, who is heading to Rutgers, or Nolan Traore, who's a European French point guard, another French player coming that's going to be a top five player. Do you think we'll see that trend happen again? Because let me tell you something. I don't think the teams that had bad records this year necessarily meant it. Like, it wasn't like a victor year. It's not like they know what's coming.
Yeah, I don't know if Cooper is on the same level as Victor as far as sure things go. But, I mean, he is. Yeah, I think somebody would take for Cooper, especially if the development continues. He's gotten so much better in the last year, especially what he brings to the table defensively. I think people like to look at his numbers and see the rebounding stats and the scoring stats, but he's a special, special defender, I think. And, you know, a defender that can defend all five positions and probably can do so also in the NBA. Yeah, I think he's definitely worth tanking for, if that's the answer.
Is there any world where Ace Bailey, you know, is the number one pick next year in 2025?
I know a lot of people that will tell you, yes, that world exists, but he is another one where the upside is completely off the charts, but we talk a lot about upside and he just hasn't dominated in a way on a big stage against major competition in the way that a number one lock would. Now, for stretches, sure. You know, he looked great at the last camp I saw him at when he was in high school, and I can't remember what that was. He played great at McDonald's too. But, you know, when you get on this, you have to be able to dominate the way Cooper does for me to think, okay, that's a sure thing. There's still a lot of growing that Ace needs to do from a skill perspective. He makes tough shots. That's what he does. But he's not a particularly efficient player because of those tough shots. You know, sometimes he just gets in the habit of chucking shots and hoping they'll go in and it goes south on him. You know, he's got to straighten out from a shot selection standpoint, I think.
How good will next year's draft class be with not only the one and done talent that we just talked about, but also the returning players? Like, we have to remember DJ Wagner is going to get another shot. KJ Evans was starting to, you know, pop a little bit at Oregon. And Aaron Bradshaw, who also kind of disappeared at Kentucky with Cal and the way they were playing.
I'm not sure about what Bradshaw's future is. I still believe in the other guys you mentioned. I think, you know, I think here's a podcast exclusive. I'm pretty sure that that DJ is going to commit to Arkansas this weekend. That's at least what the buzz seems like. So it'll be interesting to see him give another year to Calipari and see what happens. I think people are expecting a giant step forward. I think he's definitely still an NBA player down the road. It could be a good draft class as far as Americans go. And again, I don't know what's happening over there in Christian land in Europe, but the, you know, I think it could be, it'll be the best one in a while for the American kids.
You know, I'll tell you a funny story. At the draft lottery, I was standing before the draft lottery even was happening, and ESPN cameras were going around just getting some like B-roll. And I'm talking to Reed Shepard and Justin Edward. And I asked about DJ, and Justin said, he goes, I think he's going to Arkansas. And the camera was right on him. And Reed just goes, dude, the camera is right on your face.
That's one thing about Justin. I'll say this, he is never like, I don't know if he just doesn't care about media training or if he just hasn't had it, but I mean, he will say whatever. And I've always appreciated that about him.
It makes me laugh every time I think about, dude, I once asked Justin, I said, what do you work? Just Justin Edwards, who went to Kentucky for a year. I once asked him in high school, I said, where have you seen the most growth in your game from the high school season now to the end of the summer? And he goes, what you mean? I'm nice like that. I'm like, that's your answer? Like, okay, Justin.
I'll say this. If he does make it in the NBA, people are going to love him.
Love him.
As far as his personality goes. Like, he has, you know, you want to talk about advertising potential. If he ends up being a good NBA player, forget it. Because he's got charisma and he is a confident kid. And I really enjoy talking to him.
Yeah, he's like, he's on like Anthony Edwards wave in terms of, you're right. He just says whatever he wants. Well, there you go. A little Anthony, or not Anthony, Justin Edwards segment there. But that's it for today. Thank you, Rob, for sharing your insights. You can follow Rob on Twitter at @Cassidy_Rob. Follow me on Twitter too at Kristen Peak. Thanks to Brett for working hard to make this podcast sound and look great, and Hillary. Vinny Goodwill will be back with a new episode of The Good Word with Goodwill on Tuesday, and I'll be back with another episode of On the Clock next Friday. Have a fun and safe Memorial Day weekend, and we'll see you next week.